Good evening, everyone. I'm Linor Mudu, and welcome to Health Chat. Imagine this, the body's immune system attacking its own tissue, including the joints. This is a reality for about 1% of the world population living with rheumatoid arthritis. Rheumatoid arthritis, or RA, is an autoimmune disease in which the body's immune system, which normally protects its health by attacking foreign substances like bacteria and viruses, mistakenly attacks the joints. It causes lots of pain and discomfort to the people who have to live with it. The cause of rheumatoid arthritis is not yet fully understood, and on the program today we will discuss rheumatoid arthritis and attempt to have a better understanding of this condition. Joining us via phone from Vancouver, Canada is Rosemary Kirungi. Rosemary has been living with rheumatoid arthritis for many years now. Rosemary, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. Good afternoon,
Rosemary.
I'm delighted to be on VOA Health Chat Live.
Okay. I can't hear Rosemary.
We
will have Rosemary in a second. And also joining us via phone from Nairobi, Kenya, is Dr. Fred Otieno, a rheumatologist expert at the Aga Khan Hospital in Nairobi. Dr. Otieno, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. I'm delighted.
We'll have our discussion on rheumatoid arthritis in a moment, but first, VOA's Martin Seacrest has this report.
Rheumatoid arthritis, or RA, is an autoimmune disorder that affects the lining of the joints, causing painful swelling.
Opening simple things like jars or a bottle of milk in the morning can, you know, bring you to tears.
Erin Stafford is not yet 30, but says some days she feels like she's 80. But there may be help on the horizon for millions of people like her. Ranjini Thomas, lead researcher at the University of Queensland, is working on a new vaccine-style treatment for RA using a patient's own cells, modified and re-injected into the patient to quiet the immune response.
It's rather re-educating the immune system so that instead of responding to that enemy, to actually stop responding so that things will quieten down.
In a phase one clinical trial, the vaccine was found to be safe and effective. The researchers say their approach is experimental, but if successful, might also be applied to other autoimmune diseases. I'm Martin Seacrest for VOA's Living Better.
And I want to thank you both, Dr. Otieno and Rosemary, for joining us. Sorry, we were having a little technical difficulties when we started the show.
Can you hear me now?
Now I can hear you loud and clear. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Lino.
Good
I'm
afternoon, Rosemary.
To be on VOA Health Chat Live.
Thank you. It's good to have you live.
Good evening, Dr. Otieno. Habari za usiku, Nairobi.
Good evening, Dr. Otieno. Hello in Nairobi. How's everything over there?
Nairobi is quite good.
That's fantastic.
Cold evening in Nairobi.
That's great. Listen, we want to talk about rheumatoid arthritis. And this is a problem that many people suffer from. As I mentioned earlier, 1% of the population globally suffers from this condition. And I want to start with a patient's perspective. Rosemary, you've been living with rheumatoid arthritis for about 30 years or even more. Tell us about, first of all, how can you describe it as a patient, from the patient's perspective? How would you describe this condition?
It's a very painful condition. When you have a flare-up, your joints are swollen, they're red, you have low-grade fever. It's like you've been run over by a truck, and again, the truck reverses and runs over you again. Everything is aching, and sometimes it's difficult to get out of bed or even to groom yourself or hold a cup of tea. I remember when I first had the diagnosis at 25 years, my hands were flared up, and I couldn't even hold cutlery or comb my hair. Wow. So it's that. But medicine research has come a very long way. You know, there's new treatments, so it doesn't get like that, you know.
So, Dr. Otieno, this is really It's really difficult to hear even Rosemary explaining the way she feels with this condition. Can you help us understand? I mentioned earlier that it's an autoimmune disease, but how can we even understand that the body is fighting itself and causing this joint pain and all this body ache?
Well, rheumatoid arthritis is the prototype of autoimmune diseases that affects the joints. But rheumatoid arthritis does not only affect the joints, it's a multi-systemic disease. So really the joints are the most prominent manifestations because they do ache. But there are lots of structures that can get affected in rheumatoid arthritis. For example, severe rheumatoid arthritis can affect the eyes, can affect the blood vessels, can also affect the internal organs. So really what happens is that the immune system during development is taught to develop what we call immune tolerance. So the immune system tolerates yourself. But for some unknown reasons in autoimmune diseases like rheumatoid arthritis, then that tolerance is lost. So when that tolerance is lost, then the immune system goes berserk, so to say. So it attacks your own self, hence the term autoimmunity.
And what is the scope of the problem in Africa in general, in particular in Kenya where you work?
Well, rheumatoid arthritis is a fairly common disease. For example, in my practice, I see between 30 to 50 patients every day, and I would say about 10 or so new patients come around with rheumatoid arthritis. So it is something that was previously probably not noticed. Mm-hmm. We believe that the 1% burden that is worldwide also mirrors what we see in Africa. So, for example, in a country like Kenya with 45 million people, we believe that there are over 450,000 patients outside there who have rheumatoid arthritis. The tragedy is that most of these patients, by the time they come to us, they come pretty late. They have quite some significant disabilities, and it becomes really challenging to treat them at that level.
Wow. And Rosemary, I mean, when we hear arthritis in general, we think a lot about the elderly, but you were diagnosed at the age of 25. What was it like to hear these words, and did you even know what it was?
That's a very good question. It was very, very frightening, and you know, I was fearful. I was young at 25 with a young son who was about 4 years. Mm. I was married, enjoying life, working, and life was good. So it was quite a fearful time. I must say, though, I was under a lot of emotional trauma. I had lost two brothers in their prime of life, one at 28, a barrister during the anarchy years of Idi Amin, and one at 33, fighting to remove, the dictator. So this was, it brought on untold stress, and a lot of dreadful things were going on. I was fortunate to be in Europe. I was living in London when I was diagnosed. Mm. And in Europe, conventional medicine goes hand in hand with alternative medicine. So my rheumatologist did also recommend that I start homeopathy treatments, and I was seeing a naturopath. I tried to keep as active as I could, swam every day during my lunchtime at work, and on the weekend would do some swimming, you know, with my family. I learned at a very early age that I must keep active, and that with water, you do receive a lot of benefits. It was very hard, but I'm thankful also for the love of my family. Mm-hmm. They stood by me, and they were, you know, they offered all the help I need, and I don't think I could have done it without them, and with the help of friends. And I've got strong Christian beliefs, and I you know, putting my trust in God has been, you know, it gives me, and I'm thankful for his healing presence when I wake up, and I'm thankful. I know that he alone gives me the desire and the fortitude to keep on going no matter what.
So you have a strong support system.
Give me a positive attitude or outlook on everything.
Yes, it really sounds like it's something very, very difficult to live with, and all of this is definitely needed to be able to carry on from the description of your condition. Dr. Otieno, one of the things that Rosemary mentioned is the fact that when she was diagnosed, she had gone through some very stressful time. So is stress a condition that can trigger rheumatoid arthritis? Can you talk to us about the causes?
Well, stress, to answer you, stress is not one of the known causes of rheumatoid arthritis. But as with all chronic diseases, we tend to see higher levels of depression in patients who have rheumatoid arthritis. Well, the causes of rheumatoid arthritis are known largely, but there is some genetics. There are some genetic abnormalities that have been identified that do exist in patients with rheumatoid arthritis. But then there's also an interplay between genetics and environment. One of the strongest environmental factors that has so far been identified is cigarette smoking. There are other factors that are thought to be involved in the causation of rheumatoid arthritis, for example, infections, but these are not yet proven. But there's a very strong correlation between smoking and development of rheumatoid arthritis.
Okay. And I was going to ask you also gender. You mentioned sexual. I don't know if that's what you meant, but can gender be a factor in terms of, when you look at the statistics in terms of how many men have it versus women? And she also mentioned the fact that she had a baby 4 years prior to her diagnosis. Could that be a trigger as well? I'm just trying to see how much gender can play into this.
Well, we suspect that there could be a role of the hormone estrogen, because if you look at the distribution of rheumatoid arthritis globally, and we also see that in Kenya, is that you have a ratio of about 9 to 1. So for every 9 females, you'll have 1 male affected by rheumatoid arthritis. So probably there could be a role in terms of the female hormone, the estrogen. Then, as Rosemary has mentioned, and you asked earlier, is that when people think about arthritis, they think about the elderly. But really, most of these autoimmune conditions, especially rheumatoid arthritis, they tend to occur, especially in ladies, between the reproductive age. So we are talking about most of them being between age of 15 to 49. Now, in relation to childbirth, there is really no relationship with childbirth, but there is when somebody is pregnant, we would expect that probably the disease may get worse or so, but there's a paradoxical improvement in the disease activity. But then after they deliver, we tend to see quite high levels of flares that do occur. Probably this is because of hormonal changes that are related to that occur during pregnancy.
Now, you mentioned flare, and this is something that Rosemary also mentioned. What is a flare? How can we understand what it is?
Well, so the disease usually has there are times that the disease, I would say, is quiet, but then you get these peaks of episodes where you get intense disease activity. So patients will present now with joint pain, swelling, and all the symptoms attributable to rheumatoid arthritis. So this can occur whether somebody is on treatment or not, yes? Mm-hmm. But the flares tend to be less when somebody is on treatment.
Okay. And
please add something?
Yes, I was going to
you
actually.
Regarding genetics.
Yeah, go ahead, please.
Thank you. My grandmother had very bad rheumatoid arthritis, and I remember her quite ill. She passed away when I was about 12 years old. But then, of course, I mean, she passed away in the 70s. And one of my maternal uncles had very bad rheumatoid arthritis. So I do believe, yes, that it runs in families, or the genetics do play a big role. You know, with you also touched on how most of the world thinks that the disease is, you know, dismisses it as an old person's disease,
yes,
particularly in Africa. And with rheumatoid too, or most of the arthritises, I mean, people look at your face and you look normal, mm-hmm, but you could be in excruciating pain. You learn to live with the pain. And they... I think Africans, sub-Saharan Africa, needs to understand that these diseases are painful and debilitating, and that they can affect anyone, as Dr. Otieno has touched on, the early age, like 16, and, you know, I've seen juvenile arthritis as early as 12 years old.
Wow.
And they live with that till,
yes,
you know.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we will have to take a short break for the news, and we will continue our conversation. To the listeners, don't go away. This is a very interesting and enlightening conversation on rheumatoid arthritis. We have more for you with Rosemary and Dr. Otieno, so don't go away. We'll be right back. It's time now for the news with Sarah Ellen.
A new study by the International Federation of Red Cross and Red Crescent Societies say that that safe burial practices may have helped prevent the transmission of thousands of cases of Ebola during the epidemic in West Africa between 2013 and 2016. The study reveals the traditional burial practice of washing and touching the dead was a major mode of transmission of Ebola during the outbreak in Liberia, Sierra Leone, and Guinea, as the virus is at its peak when the person dies. While isolating patients is key to preventing the spread of the disease, the study says early burial is crucial to keeping Ebola in check. Authors of the project say the Red Cross had to change its approach in dealing with communities that adhered to traditional burial practices and spoke about safe and dignified burials instead of management of the remains. In another study, researchers say climate change could bring malaria risk to Ethiopia's highlands. Experts say Ethiopia's highlands traditionally have a built-in protection against malaria transmission due to the elevation and the cool temperatures. But Bradfield Lyon, a researcher at the University of Maine, found that since 1981, the elevation needed to protect people from malaria has risen by 100 meters. Lyon's study found that temperatures in the Horn of Africa are rising by an average of 0.2 degrees Celsius per decade due to climate change. Lyon emphasizes that this is a meteorological study with no evidence of malaria transmission, but the research is pointing out that it is possible. And finally, the UN Children's Fund warns that cholera cases and deaths in war-torn Yemen continue to mount and could reach 300,000 by the end of August. UNICEF puts the current number of suspected cases at nearly 200,000, including more than 1,200 deaths, with a quarter of those being children. UNICEF says containing the cholera outbreak in Yemen is extremely difficult. It says the health system is near total collapse. Water and sanitation systems are in disrepair, and the people who are meant to care for patients, collect the garbage, and maintain vital systems have not been paid for 6 months. The UNICEF representative in Yemen, Mercel Relano, says despite the obstacles, aid agencies are making progress in reducing cholera cases and deaths in some parts of the country. And that's a wrap-up of your latest health news. Lenord, back to you.
Thank you. That was Sarah Lynn with the news. And welcome back for those of you joining us late tonight. We are discussing rheumatoid arthritis. Our guest, Rosemary Kirungi, she is a rheumatoid arthritis patient and advocate, and Dr. Fred Otieno, a rheumatologist expert at the Aga Khan Hospital in Nairobi. Again, thanks to the both of you for joining us for this very important topic. Rosemary, let me come to you. We talked about flare-up. Dr. Otieno explained what it is, and I wanted to ask you if you have noticed a pattern in terms of flare-ups occurring in your body. Do you know of a trigger? Are there some specific times where you are more inclined to have flare-ups?
I can't really say that I know of triggers, but you did touch earlier on, or Dr. Thiano mentioned the environment. I was quite surprised. I did spend about 4 years back home in Uganda, and, you know, most people think because you're in a warmer climate, you wouldn't have a flare-up, and I had two very horrible flare-ups. Had to be airlifted. I couldn't even climb the stairs of the aircraft on Kenya Airways to come to Nairobi Hospital. And I don't particularly know why those flare-ups, but I know that the environment, like pollution and black smoke, or if I'm in an area where there's asphalt or things like that, you know, I could have a trigger. My knees are almost like a barometer, you know, even if I'm in a room where there are no windows, if it's going to rain or the clouds are heavy with rain, I can almost just feel it in my knees, things like that. I couldn't say really why, you know, why the flares come on.
I understand. Thank you for sharing your experience. We really appreciate it, really. And Dr. Thiano, now let's talk about diagnosis. With regards to this condition, there are other conditions that tend to mimic some of the symptoms that you discussed and Rosemary talked about when she was diagnosed. So how do you diagnose rheumatoid arthritis, and how advanced are we in diagnosing it in Kenya and perhaps sub-Saharan Africa?
Well, diagnosis of rheumatoid arthritis, luckily we have agreeable international diagnostic criteria that we use. So internationally we use the ACR, which is American College of Rheumatology, mm-hmm. and the EULA, which is the European League Against Rheumatism. So they have a diagnostic criteria which has a composite panel of clinical symptoms. There are some lab parameters that are involved, and there are also some X-ray findings or radiological findings that are involved. So based on that, it is helpful for a clinician to make a diagnosis. Of course, there are mimickers, and there are also challenges, especially in sub-Saharan Africa, in terms of diagnostic lab investigations. But, for example, where I work in Nairobi, this readily available, but I would imagine in the rural setup, then mm-hmm. that becomes quite tricky for the clinicians down there to make a diagnosis.
And let's talk also about care when we talk about perhaps challenges. Rosemary, you mentioned that you were in London when you were diagnosed, which was, I guess it was good for you to be in that setting, when, according to what you said, because you were able to get the care you needed at that time. So what about care in the African setting? And Rosemary, can you give us your perspective living in the West as opposed to perhaps, you know, people in Africa that are going through the same experience?
Yes, I can actually, and I can talk about those flare-ups. When I was in Uganda, I had to be airlifted to Nairobi Hospital. Mm-hmm. I was under the care of another rheumatologist known as Dr. Omondi Oyo, whom I'm sure Dr. Thiano is familiar with. I was able to seek help outside of Uganda, but I just think of the ordinary person that is not able or doesn't have the means and finances to do that. Mm-hmm. Medical care in Africa isn't socialized, so you're paying out of pocket for everything. So, you know, I know that there is a lot of pain and suffering, silent pain, invisible pain, and complete breakdowns of people not able their lives being impacted on. And in the West, I mean, I live in Canada. It's a beautiful country. BC is very beautiful. I'm so grateful and thankful to be under the care of Dr. Kamsho Jania. He's the head of rheumatology at UBC and at VGH. I'm so grateful for for the physiotherapists, the OTs, the nurses. It's incredible medical care here. I've been receiving, actually, when I was in Nairobi, I was started on that on the biologic rituximab, and that has worked like night and day for me. I'm functional, and it's a blessing to be able to have that treatment. Mm-hmm. But it's quite a costly treatment. I don't know if you know, ministries of health or hospitals can avail that at probably you know, a more cost effective price for the patients. Yes. It's no comparison, really.
Yes, and Dr. Chenyo, if I could have you react to this in terms of treatment, a rheumatoid expert providing services in your setting, perhaps you may have some resources, but can you elaborate on the available treatment and resources, whether it's in your hospital or just in general in the region?
Well, in fact, let me just echo what Rosemary's experience is, because the biggest challenge we have in terms of resources, human resources. Because as we speak, we are only 7 rheumatologists in Kenya, serving a population of 45 million. Rosemary has rightly put, there is no rheumatologist in Uganda, there is none in Rwanda, there is none in Burundi, there is none in Ethiopia, there is none in South Sudan. So we basically serve the entire East and Central Africa region. Yeah, so it's a big challenge. We would wish to have more, and there are initiatives that we've started, and hopefully, if they bear fruits, we will have more rheumatologists spreading. But even in Kenya, 6 of us are based in Nairobi, and there's only one who's based in Mombasa. So you can see the coverage is quite skewed. Now, in terms of availability of services, it is that the problem of Africa is the healthcare structure. Most patients pay for the services. So Rosemary was lucky to be able to get rituximab. Rituximab costs about 500,000 Kenya shillings. Kenya shillings, about 100 shillings is $1. So we are talking about $5,000 per injection. And you have to get that. If you got it today, you have to repeat that after 2 weeks. So you're talking about a treatment of $10,000. Most of the population cannot afford that. Mm-hmm. So it becomes very challenging to manage patients because of lack of resources.
Actually, if I may interject, yes. I was on the infusion, and I'm still on the infusions, which I get every 6 months, and you get 2 doses between 15 days, and it's a lot more expensive than even that.
Wow, that's incredible. And Rosemary, can you speak a little bit on, we're getting ready to wrap the show, but I wanted to get your reaction in terms of how has this condition affect your social life? And, you know, what do you hope to see in the future?
Oh, how has it affected my life? I used to be a very independent woman. You know, now I'm dependent on my family or certain things. But you rearrange the pieces of your life, and, you know, each day presents itself with, you know, new challenges, or it could be a good day. I always, you know, have a positive outlook. Mm-hmm. I'm no longer working full-time, actually retired, but recently I went back to part-time conference management.
Okay. So in 5 seconds, do you have a message in 5 seconds, because we're getting ready to wrap?
Oh,
very quickly.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I would like to create more awareness in Africa, and to see hopefully that you know, the ministries of health would allocate more resources.
Okay. All right. Unfortunately, we have to leave it there.
Rheumatologists, it's sad to hear, you know, that Uganda, Rwanda doesn't have any expert.
Thank you. I have to leave it
thank
there, Rosemary.
So
Dr. Otieno, thank you so much for joining us today. And I thank all the listeners. I'm your host, Lenore Moudou in Washington, with producer Kwame Ofori and with Sarah Allen with the news. Until next time, take care. Be well and strive to make every day a healthy day.